All right, welcome to this urgent last minute interview, I suppose you could say. I reached out today when I heard the news about BASF in Germany looking like they are shutting down operations there, moving them to China, feeding into the deindustrialization of Europe. I had to reach out to Michael Yon. Michael Yon, I've interviewed a couple of times before, an extraordinary individual, world traveler, an analyst, and he nailed it. He told me in a previous interview that if BASF shuts down, it's the end of European industrialization as we know it. So he agreed to join us last minute. Thank you, Mr. Yon, for coming on late at night. I know you're probably in a different country anyway, but thanks for joining me. It's great to have you back on.
Oh, it's great to come back on. I'm actually in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Just got here for some meetings. Just came in from London, and I was recently at BASF or BASF. I was there twice in the recent months researching this. And by the way, I saw you on with David Dubine earlier. I've watched dozens of his shows. He also nailed it. One of the, you and David Dubine are in the top 1% of 1% who saw this coming way in advance and realized just how crucial this is that BASF, or as I say, BASF at Ludwigshafen, Germany, is just the beating heart of this. It's just been what I've been watching for a long time. That's why I flew to Germany and then drove over to BASF a couple times, did a big tour of that giant facility. They've got something that David Dubine talked about earlier on your show, the just incredible interconnectivity of the chemical processes at BASF. In other words, they don't just make fertilizers. They make thousands and thousands of chemicals. In fact, they told me when I was there, over 40,000, which is like over 40,000, not 14 or 4,000, 40,000. It's a lot of chemicals. And they have different plants around the world, but that one is their original plant. It's huge. It's 10 square kilometers. And these processes, as David mentioned earlier, are all interconnected. And actually, BASF invented a word for that called Verbund. Verbund, when I was there, they kept using the word Verbund. And I said, I speak German, actually, because I was in the Army. I learned German at the Defense Language Institute. And I used to live in Germany, so I'd never heard that word before. And I said, what's this word, Verbund? It's a quite interesting word. And a man at BASF said, oh, we invented that actual word. Verbund means this interconnectivity of processes that is so complex that it's like an organism, like a living organism in a sense. You can't just shut it down. You'll kill the whole system, right? And as David Dubine mentioned earlier, it's once you shut this bad boy down, it's not like you just flip the switch and turn it back on. If you can get it back started, you could, but it's going to take a huge process, massive amounts of money, probable chemical leaks and explosions and all sorts of things. The people, what David said on your program is what they told me at BASF as well. Like, you know, if we turn this thing off, turning it back on is going to almost be like rebuilding the plant. I mean, it's like, and they've got, yeah. And so how important is BASF? Well, I mean, it's the beating heart. It's the one that you need to watch to see the direction of Europe itself. And they're dimming the lights. Now, while I was there on one of my trips earlier this year, they said, you know, they're looking at opening, dimming the lights on this one in Germany, Ludwigshafen, and going to China. And it was all about the energy, and it was all about the and not just the energy. There's also the control, the greens, the green. You might call it the green cancer. You know, there's an article yesterday about they're in such an energy crisis in Germany that they're actually dismantling some of the windmills now to open coal mining again. I mean, that's how
I saw that.
You can't even make up this stuff, Mike. I mean, so. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, Michael, I just want to back up. I do have a ton of questions for you, and I know you have to catch a flight pretty soon too. So let me know when you need to go. But, you know, you and I in the last interview that we did, we talked about this. We told everybody watch BASF because BASF requires natural gas, large quantities of it, not only for the hydrocarbon molecules, which is a feedstock to manufacture things like ammonia. And we talked together, you know, about the Haber-Bosch process and so on. I think our audience knows all about that. But also, the natural gas is necessary to have the power and the heat to run the processes to make the 40,000 chemicals that BASF manufactures. Well, once Nord Stream 1 and 2 got blown up by the United States, then even the possibility of having natural gas supplies abundant once again to Germany, that possibility was wrecked. And I have to believe that led to this decision, which is being reported by Reuters and others, where BASF is now saying, and this is from the CEO, what's his name here? Here it is, Martin Brudermüller, says they're going to downsize permanently. Permanently. They're not even pretending that this is transitory. This is shutting down in Europe and building up in China. As of today, that's done. So what does this tell us, Michael, about the future of Europe?
Well, it's interesting because the you know, as soon as those pipelines were blown up, of course, Nord Stream 2 wasn't actually open yet, but because of pressure from the United States in particular. But when Nord Stream 1, I was up all night, by the way, when Putin shut it down earlier this year, just watching the flows, because there was an online monitoring station where you could watch the flows. And he cut it off, but he didn't blow it up, right? And then it strongly looks like we actually did it. I mean, I would bet, you know, 99.99% we blew it up. And as soon as that happened, I said, wow, we just killed Europe. We just literally put a bullet through Europe's head. Because I, you know, this is what I do. I track this stuff. I'm tracking the energy. I'm tracking the food supplies. That's why I watch you. That's why I watch David Dubin. That's why I watch others who are watching their corners. And I'm, you know, out here basically on perpetual recon. And as soon as that happened, now I would pay attention to the Yamal flows that are going through, coming from Russia, going through Belarus and Ukraine. Those are still open for some reason. And I would watch other infrastructure, for instance, the Norwegian flows, not Nord Stream, but Norwegian flows. And there's various other pipelines. But essentially, as soon as we saw, you know, something happen to Nord Stream 1, I knew BASF was dead. And you know, and again, that's it. And so the deindustrialization, as you were talking about earlier on your earlier show with David Dubin, you know, the smelting plants, David's been talking about this for a while. They've been closing. And the steel and everything else is one by one. That's why I have bought everything that I'm going to buy, like the extra batteries for solar and solar panels and all these. That's why I pay so much attention to what you do, because you have a lot of important tips, like how to use a tractor for energy instead of getting a generator. And I mean, yeah. These sorts of things are going to become vital information for people to get through this thing, because there's going to be an epic global famine on a scale that I've been talking about it since January of 2020 was when I first started warning. January of 2020, so, you know, almost going on 3 years soon. I've been warning about it. Back then, it was just a dim, foggy thing. I could see it coming, but I couldn't quite make out the form. And now, as month by month passes, we see the form. Europe is going to go cold. You know, they're going to run out of – Germany will probably run out of gas roughly February-ish, something like that. I just drove probably 1,000 miles around Germany. I drove all, from Netherlands over to Prague and down to Hungary and over to Austria, back up all over Germany. Mike, you're not going to believe how many trees they're cutting down. I told Jordan Peterson, he spent 2 days with me over there recently after I went on a show. I said, Jordan, when you're flying over Germany, look out the window and take photos of all those empty, those trees that are being cut down. I mean, they're cutting down millions and millions of trees. And as you know, there's a big difference in heating your home with firewood as opposed to having a romantic, you know, Christmas fire in the fireplace. And I lived in Germany for 4 years. I lived in Poland for 2 years. So I lived in Europe for 6 years. It's quite cold in Northern Europe. They're going to have to basically cut down every tree in Germany. But keep in mind, they're also doing the same in Poland and Hungary, and Lithuania is cutting down trees and sending them to Ireland. I was just in Ireland as well. And the bottom line is they're just not going to have enough. And not only that, as they cut these green trees down, it takes a couple of years to season it anyway. It's not like they're going to throw all these trees in a kiln and dry them out, not to mention the fact that they are, you know, as David Dubin and you have said many times, it doesn't matter how much electricity you have, which they're not going to have enough anyway. They already don't have enough electricity. But it doesn't matter if you have 100 nuclear plants, everything working perfectly. You can't make nitrogen-based fertilizers with that electricity. You've got to have the gas, the Haber-Bosch process, which you've described many times on your show. David has described it many times. I described it many times. It is just what it is. The math is not going to add up. Now, one thing that we get from famines is always get pandemic from famine, and you always get war every time, no exception. And another thing you get from that triangle of death, the four horsemen, but that three horsemen is the pandemic, famine, war, right? You get HOP, human osmotic pressure, the push and pull of migration. And right now we see massive numbers. As you know, I've been spending months, 4 months, 5 months in the jungles in Panama in the last couple of years in the Darien Gap. Took two congressmen down in there, Tom Tiffany from Wisconsin, for instance, took them deep into the jungle to watch these migration flows that are flowing from Africa, flowing from Asia, and flowing from South America, and also Haiti and Cuba, flowing through Colombia. I was down in Colombia as well. That's where the Darien Gap starts. And then it comes into Panama. What we're looking at here is as these famines unfold in places like Africa and Europe, you know, people can make it to the United States in many ways. All you have to do is get to South America somehow. And once you get to South America, then get to Colombia and go through that jungle. And then it's just bus rides in Europe, you know, Texas, California, New Mexico, and all that. So, I mean, you know, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's everything you're saying is extremely valuable, but I want to focus this on something, how this impacts America as well. But first, since you speak German, the steel plant in Germany, the steel company, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. So I'll ask you, is it ArcelorMittal? Is that how you say that?
I think it'd be ArcelorMittal. But I don't know. I heard David talking about it earlier, but I haven't been over there.
ArcelorMittal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that company is shutting down the two largest steel plants in Europe. They're both located in Germany, according to media reports, and they're shutting them both down for the same reason that BASF is shutting down. So if you're shutting down steel, and we already know that ammonia has been shut down, and aluminum and manganese, zinc, copper smelting, nickel, all that stuff, and now BASF is shutting down, you know, the it's no longer a debate that the deindustrialization of Europe has arrived. Now it's just a matter of whatever's left in inventory, you know, being gone over the next few months. And then that's it. There's no more steel. There's no more aluminum. There's no more chemicals, no more fertilizer, period. That's it, right?
Oh, yeah. And keep in mind, I just spent 4 months in Europe. I was over in, you know, Germany and Netherlands and Austria, Hungary, Luxembourg, Belgium, where else? Czech Republic, Ireland, just was in London for meetings. It's clear that they're going to have famine across Europe. It's crystal clear. And as I just told a member of parliament in the Netherlands the other day, I said, look, at this rate, you're going to lose Amsterdam to the sea. You're going to lose a lot of Netherlands to the sea because you have to have energy to keep that water back, period. You don't have those windmills anymore, right? And although Netherlands has plenty of energy, by the way, they've got natural gas at Groningen, plenty of it. It's right underground. Same as the UK. They got it up at Blackpool.
They're just not tapping into it.
Yeah, it's right there. And the infrastructure's already there. Mike, all you got to do is turn the valve to the right a little bit. It's right there. The infrastructure's there. That's it. It's that simple. And they're not doing it because the information war, the highest form of warfare is information war, right? That's it. And the information war has got all these people going, oh, no, we're having earthquakes because of, you know, they're pumping the gas out of Groningen, which they had these like 2.3 earthquakes, you know, real whoppers, real, you know, building flatteners. It puts cracks in people's walls, right? That's all it does. So spackle up the walls and start pumping that gas out. And I talked with when Jordan Peterson came over, we spent two dinners. I arranged one dinner with a scientist one night, and the next evening I arranged a dinner with a retired CEO of a huge Dutch chemical plant that used to make ammonia. And you know, we talked about that for, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours with Jordan. And the CEO, the retired CEO, he's like, listen, India and Brazil, they're going to starve because they are dependent on Europe for their ammonia, for their nitrogen-based fertilizers. They just can't get it. They're not going to get it from Trinidad and Tobago. There's not going to be enough. There's not enough anywhere in the world. China's not going to send it to them. They're just not going to get it. So, you know, several years ago, maybe 4 or 5, actually, I was down in Sri Lanka checking it out. I was checking out food issues. And I was over in I checked out Bangladesh, and I was specifically checking it out for in case there was a famine there, actually. And I checked out Myanmar because I'm here in Thailand now. There's a reason I'm here. Tomorrow I'm meeting with one of the ex-prime ministers. He's a friend of mine. And what I'm going to talk about is tell him about these routes that I reconned from India through Bangladesh through Myanmar. You know, Thailand has plenty of food. Thailand's good to go. It looks like it. You go to the grocery stores, the prices are higher, a lot higher, but they still have plenty of food. But when India and Bangladesh and Myanmar all start to, Myanmar has a lot of arable land, by the way, it's not planted. They need to get on it. But you're going to have that hop, that human osmotic pressure, where India and Bangladesh just dump right through Myanmar and come right here to Thailand, right? You should see the border between Myanmar and Thailand. I spent a lot of time out there, and, you know, it's just junk. It's easy to go across. You know, you're not going to be able to stop them. And so, you know, this is the thing that people have to take into account. And one of the things, if you read books on famine, I would suggest everybody read at least 5 books on famine and stop what you're doing and start reading them now. A lot of people say, hey, it's not a problem for me because I live surrounded by farmland. That's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. Just because you live around farmland means absolutely zero, zero. That's how much weight you should put on the security of living around farmland. For instance, in Mao's Great Famine. Go ahead.
Let me interject a question that's related to that, and then you can continue that thought. But in terms of the movement of these commodities around the world, so the United States fertilizer industry, whatever they produce domestically in the U.S. is going to be purchased by Europe and by India and other countries. In other words, they're going to deplete the fertilizer supply in the U.S. because somebody else somewhere else is going to be willing to pay more for that fertilizer. Somebody put it on a ship and just put it across the ocean. Same thing with LNG. So the natural gas that would normally be supplied in the United States to have affordable gas, a lot of it, as much as they can, is being shipped over to Europe right now. So that's creating gas shortages in the United States, which is exactly to your point, Michael. You can have farms all around you. It doesn't matter if the fertilizer is all shipped off because somebody overseas is willing to pay triple the price.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. And also, like countries like Japan. Japan imports more than 70% of its food. And Malaysia just cut off gas shipments to Japan. You know, so there's all these little things that all in this very complex system, all these island nations and island states. Hawaii imports more than 90% of their food. Puerto Rico, all these different Cuba, all these different places. They're just not going to make it. And in our population, as you've said it on your program numerous times, there's probably 4 billion with a B extra people on Earth because of the Haber-Bosch process, which is being systematically turned off. And so there's just when the musical chairs stop, which they have stopped already, it's actually stopped. There's still a bunch of fertilizer in the pipe, but not enough already. And then as we go into the planting season, it's just like when we were when I was having dinner with the CEO of the chemical plant and Jordan Peterson. He said, listen, the fertilizer is just the farmers don't have it. Usually, he said, we make fertilizer 365 days a year, except for the annual maintenance, which, you know, they're scheduled. And so that's accounted for. So they're constantly just creating the fertilizer and then shipping it out, right? They don't just ship it out into giant warehouses. They ship some of it like that, but a lot of it goes directly to the in-state buyer, right? And so that everybody's ready. When they're ready to fertilize their field, it's not like everybody then orders suddenly and all the trucks rush to the farms. No, they've already got it. They're set to go. They load up their tractors and all that, and they go fertilize their fields. But it's just not there. And so, so we're going to end up with huge famines, which will end up always with pandemic because famines always create pandemic. And those two things always create more war, which always creates more famine. So you get this cycle. It's a positive feedback loop, and which always creates human osmotic pressure, the push and pull of migration. Now, one of the things about economies when they collapse, for instance, Weimar Germany in the early 20s, 1920s, there was plenty of food, but people went into famine because they didn't have enough money due to hyperinflation. So there's more than one thing that can cause famine. One is there can be enough food. In this case, in our case, there will not be enough food. But also when you just don't have enough money, right? And then people start robbing trucks and trains and boats and warehouses and that sort of thing. And so then the food stops moving and they start robbing farmers. And actually, they do what's called gleaning, which is in the Bible, actually. I took Jordan Peterson out to a farmer in Netherlands. His name is Jordan. He's a dairy farmer. He said, Michael, they are starting to glean again. I've never seen gleaning in my life. This is what the farmer said, the Dutch farmer. He said his parents told him about it and his grandparents told him about it. Gleaning is when the farmers harvest the field, like onions or whatever they're harvesting, about 2 to 3% of the crops don't make it. They just either don't get it out of the ground or falls off the truck or whatever. And then the people will come and collect it. He said he had never seen that in his life, but they're starting to do it again in Netherlands, right? So what happens is people, and that's actually in the Bible. If you look at gleaning, it's like cleaning, but with a G, golf. So gleaning. So, and you'll see that the Bible actually tells you to let people glean. And so they're starting to glean. So I looked on the internet for any other evidence of this. I found on YouTube, naturally, there's people on YouTube teaching people how to glean in the United States now. Now, this goes into an interesting direction, by the way. And one of the reasons I said that just because you live around farms doesn't mean anything at all. Because first of all, in every famine that I've studied, the government always comes and starts taking food from the farm. Again, no exception to that. And another thing that happens is people start to steal from farmers, and because they're hungry. It's not because they're just natural thieves. It's because they're hungry. Right? And so and then the farmers go bankrupt. Right. And so then the farmers then stop planting. And then now you go into a really severe famine. So that second season, that first season, you get into the food shortages. People are hungry. They start robbing things because they're hungry. The government starts taking food from farmers. Now you get into that second season when the farmers are actually not farming. And in this case, not farming and not enough fertilizer for those who are farming. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, 2023 going to be rough, 2024 going to be hell on earth, and no telling what 2025 is going to bring. But, you know, people that are like, hey, I've got 3 months of food, I should be fine. No, no, you're not even in the right. You're not even in the ballpark. You know, you didn't even show up to the baseball field with 3 months supply. Right.
No, I've heard some people on the internet that are kind of, I don't know, watered down preppers. They're telling people who live in apartments that you're fine if you just have a 30-day supply of food because everything should be working again within a few weeks. I've heard
yeah,
that.
Right. You're right. And people that follow your work know that's nonsense. And then yeah. People that follow David Dubon as well. I mean, you know, I just tell people all the time, just listen to Mike. Listen to Mike Adams. Listen to David Dubon. And then, you know, make up your own mind. And I'm telling you what I see. And what I see is actually – we're not in an echo chamber because we all discovered each other after we all saw this, right? We found each other post facto when I'm like, hey, there's somebody else who actually sees it, right? You know, the Haber-Bosch process.
I was talking about the Haber process like in late 2020 or sometime in 2021, I think. And I remember, I was on InfoWars doing a show about it, and people were asking me afterwards, like, why are you talking about chemistry? Like, because half the world is only alive because of this. Like, I don't mean to turn this into like the science hour, but everybody's got to know NH3 ammonia comes, the H comes from the hydrocarbons in natural gas. And if you don't have the H, you don't have the NH3. If you don't have the NH3, you don't have nitrogen fertilizers. And then you don't have food. And then you don't have half of humanity. End of story. I mean,
that's right. And they're shutting off the actual flows. And if the flow is not there, it's just like cutting the arteries in your neck. It's that simple. And, exactly. and it's clear that this is being done methodically. This is not accidental. I'm sure there's some background noise of there was just an actual accident here and there. But this is on the bigger picture of things. This is we are methodically being dismantled. And we actually know who's doing it. If we had a real president and a real United States government, this would not be happening. We know who they are. We know their names. We can go get them, right? We can physically go get them, but we're not doing it. And this is, we're just being dismantled because we're not taking physical action to stop them.
Well, what's extraordinary is how the United States blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, which was an act of war against Europe, not Russia. That was an act of war against the European people. And countries like Germany and Austria and so on and Poland. I mean, but look, Michael, I know you've got to run. You got to catch a flight. Any final thoughts you want to add here before you go?
Well, I would just encourage people to keep listening to you because after I found you, I started listening to you. And because, you know, the things that you say are the things that I physically see on the ground on my perpetual global reconnaissance, right? And David Dubon. Sometimes David's talking about stuff. I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about with all this some stuff. But when he's talking about things that I actually know about, he's always dead on. He's right on target, right over the target. So that's why I started listening to both of you guys.
Wow. Well, that's quite a compliment, but I've been listening to you too since, I mean, we've only known each other for a couple of months. I mean, that's it. And only through these interviews, we've never met in person. I'm so impressed with all your travels and you're on the ground and you've sent me a bunch of intel tips. By the way, I thank you for that. You're seeing things, you're confirming things. So that we're not just talking about theories here, folks. We're talking about actual things happening on the ground. And Michael, you're the guy on the ground. Oh, let me give out your website. I forgot to do that. You're on locals.com, and it's just Michael Yon. That's Y-O-N. MichaelYon.locals.com will take you right there. And you've got, you can donate to Michael. You can become a member. You can get some special content, things like that. So he's part of the locals.com community there. Anything else you want to add, Michael?
Nope, except that, again, I'm perpetually – global reconnaissance. And I was just at BASF twice. And they were saying, there in the plant, the things that you and David Dubheim were just talking about, they were telling me that at the plant. I mean, they're going to shut down and they're moving to China. And and I think I told you that a couple months ago when we first got into contact. I think
yes,
I was like, hey, I just left the plant. And they're like, hey, they're moving to China. It's like, and now there they go.
Now it's official and it's permanent. They're describing it as permanent. That's the key here, folks. This isn't just, oh, we're going to shut down this winter or we're going to wait for the Nord Stream 1 pipeline to be rebuilt. No, permanent, moving to China. And what do you think is going to happen, folks, when we're in a war with China and China just nationalizes the BASF chemical plant? Then you think you're going to get those chemicals ever again anywhere outside of China? No, not a chance, not a chance.
It's stunning, Mike. It's stunning. It's as permanent as cutting off your arm. I mean, what you just said, they're putting BASF in China where they can just go, okay, that's our fertilizer now. You can't even make up this stuff.
No, it's insane. But again, the leader of BASF also said it's because of the insane green policies that why they're moving, because frankly, the greenies who are, obviously are clear cutting all the forests now, because I guess that's a green thing now is to have clear cut, former trees, but they don't like chemicals. Just anything like chemicals that are used to make food or chemicals in textiles, chemicals in oil refining, chemicals in manufacturing, to make airplanes. I mean, frankly, to make the blenders that you use to make smoothies like I do. There are certain molecules, folks, you have to have in your supply chain or you don't have modern civilization. If you're against molecules, you are against life on Earth, period.
Mike, let me say one more thing in that regard. I know you got to go. I'll cancel my flight to talk with you.
You got to go. I don't have to go.
No, I don't have to go. I'll cancel my freaking flight and get a later flight.
You to cancel your flight, but let's continue. But I don't want you to miss your flight.
I still got time.
Okay.
Let me tell you something funny. I at different times when I run across greenies especially when I'm traveling abroad, as soon as they find out that I'm American, first they want to suss out where you stand on guns. You know what I mean? Especially English and Germans. And I'm like, and every time English, especially English, not just British, but English. And every time they bring it up, and I'm like, listen, the reason that we have a Second Amendment is because of you. It's because of Germans and English, right? Okay, right. It's because of you, right? And I'm proud to say I had two grandfathers that fought in the Revolutionary War, and hopefully they shot your grandparents. But,
icebreaker, yeah.
I'm just very direct, I love, when you got a greenie on the line and you got some, a few extra minutes, I'll tell them about this chemical that's being studied. It's called, a dihydrogen monoxide.
And right.
Oh, you know where I'm going with that.
Yes.
It's like so many people are dying from dihydrogen monoxide and they're spraying it on the farms and everything else. It's amazing how many of them will be like, yeah, we should consider stopping this dihydrogen monoxide,
It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing. Well, of course, the audience probably overdoses. You're talking about H2O. So
there
you go.
Where did I get that from? I think I got that from a high school chemistry teacher or something. I don't know where I got it from, but I've used it like hundreds of times.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, I come out of the organic food industry and most of what I produce is all organic. So, you know, I don't want glyphosate. I don't want chemical castrators like atrazine, but I sure as heck want nitrogen. You know what I mean?
You must.
I mean, I want photosynthesis also. I don't want the sun to be dimmed. You know, I want carbon dioxide in the atmosphere so that plants can actually grow. If you don't have CO2, you don't have crops, period. End of story. It's crazy that we have to – I mean, I learned photosynthesis, what, in the like the 10th grade biology class or something? And today you have adults who still don't know how photosynthesis even works or why it's necessary, why you can't block the sun and expect civilization to survive.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here in Thailand surrounded by – well, you wouldn't believe how much green is around me. This is jungle, you know, and you know, it's just – yeah, people are always talking about follow the science. And most of them are completely scientifically illiterate to the point where they don't even know what the scientific method is. They're completely unfamiliar with it. They think feelings are actually scientific evidence, you know?
Yeah, true. And they think that Earth should be a frozen, dead ice ball where all the water is locked up in ice where you can't grow anything, by the way. I mean, it's crazy. It's like, listen to yourself. Oh, the oceans might rise if the Earth is warmer. What, I'm like, what, are you against water? I mean, are you anti-ocean? What's wrong with more ocean? I mean, what's wrong with a little more warmth, more rainfall, more rainforest, more pollinators and flowers in the rainforest? You know, you raise CO2, you get more rainforest, more crops. You can turn desert areas into food crop areas if you have more CO2, by the way. And people have no idea of that. They're clueless.
You said something earlier, not on our show, but on a previous show today. You were talking about, you know, if more people had been watching your show early in the pandemic, they would still be alive because they wouldn't have taken those jabs.
True.
You know, and these same, man, I can't tell you how many stories. You've got as many as I have of people that you know that are in your family or your friend circles or something that took the jab and they're either now dead or terribly injured.
Yes.
And it's just, and here in Thailand, they're jabbing like a bunch of junkies. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, like I was talking with a friend a couple of days ago and he's like, oh yes, my friend took it and all of his hair fell out and now he can't walk very well. You know, just endless stream of stories like this. And yet they keep going back for the next jab.
It's bizarre. But you see, there's an element of humanity that is part of the suicide cult, right? Where they will say, I mean, we saw an actress put out a video a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week in the U.S., and she was saying, oh, I took the vaccine. Look at my face. It's all jacked up. It's half paralyzed. I can't speak, but I would do it again. And we're all thinking, are you insane?
Yes, she is. I saw that. You know, one of the things I learned when I was in Special Forces is, you know, you have to put a lot of study into mythology and cults, actually, because when you're an SF, you travel around to all these, you know, interesting places and you come across all these little cults all over the place because there's thousands and thousands of cults in the world. Right.
Yeah.
And the only cult somebody will never see is the cult they are in. Right. You'll never see the cult you're in. You know what I mean? You'll see everybody else's cult, like that poor guy. He's in a cult, you know. But you know, the lady with the jacked up face, she will not see it. It's like invisible to her by definition, right?
Yeah, but that's what's incredible is the level of brainwashing. And you know, you go all around the world, and you're a student of history. You're a voracious reader. I don't know if our audience is aware of that, but you read a lot of books, so you know the cycles of history. And, you know, isn't especially the 20th century, wouldn't you say that's a century of mass human delusion? You know, just people believing false things and suffering for it.
Yeah. And as you've talked about earlier, we're getting better, no worse, at using the tech, the tools that are at hand. There's always been brainwashing and that sort of thing. But now it's at an industrial scale. And it's just so high tech with the ability for AI to search through all the things that we do and say and our facial motions and all these sorts of things. And, you know, at the rate that we're headed, we're going to end up being slaves to AI very quickly.
Right.
You know, people have warned about this for years. You've warned about it. Alex Jones has warned about it. Everybody says Alex is crazy. I'm like, listen, Alex may or may not be crazy, but Alex is right. You know what I mean? You know, it's like I listen to him because he's right about this stuff. You know what I mean?
He's been right over and over again. Exactly.
Yeah. And right sounds crazy when it's 5 years ahead of everybody else or 15 years, right?
Well, I have a quote about that I'll share with you, that if you're 5 days ahead, you're considered a genius. If you're 5 years ahead, you're considered a lunatic.
That's right. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a different question. Remix News is reporting the following headline, that German politicians plan to sell off the strategic Hamburg port to China. They're going to sell a port to China.
Yep. Again, what? Can't make up this stuff. And you and I talked about Tri-State City. You remember Tri-State City in Netherlands? And I'm taking that thought that you just mentioned, and I'm going in another place with it that's directly related. Tri-State City is that big part of Netherlands. They're trying to take the farms away from the Dutch farmers and a lot of the German and also Belgian farmers, so they can create this big thing called Tri-State City, right?
Yeah.
Tri-State City, Tri-State because it's Netherlands, Belgium, and part of Germany. And it's going to be this huge smart city, right? Which means just exchange the word smart for controlled farm city.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and so, but what's at the end of that tri-state city? The port is Rotterdam, right? And where does that Rotterdam port go? Straight to China. That's where those railroads come, straight from China, straight to Rotterdam, right? And so, again, this is not like, for people that aren't connecting the dots here, they might not realize that, like, this train system goes straight from Shanghai on the Pacific side all the way to Rotterdam, all the way up to Hamburg, all over. I mean, this is like, this is a globalist, you know, I told Bannon this. I said, you know, I don't think he agrees with me, but I said, I think Tri-State City is set to be the future global capital of the world. However, let me go to another place with that. Tri-State City, most of that will be in Netherlands, which would be flooded if the globalists actually planned to let the energy, you know, go to such a level that the Netherlands can't pump the water out of the sea, or if they really thought the seas were going to rise that much, why would they build Tri-State City? That's like, that'd be like, you know, Obama getting a home at Hawaii and another one up at Martha's Vineyard right next to the sea. Right.
Right.
I mean, if they really believe that, if the globalists really believed that Tri-State City was going to be flooded by the rising seas, they just wouldn't build it. But the farmers in Netherlands own about 62% of the farmland, and they need, and the globalists need that farmland, first of all, to control people so they can feed us crickets. They have printable meat already in Netherlands. I went to a restaurant. I ordered the meat so I could make video and photos of it. I didn't need it. But they actually sell printable meat in restaurants in Netherlands already right now, right? And so they want to take that farmland, and then they'll control the food supply, the production and distribution, and also rationing cards, which you were talking about earlier with David. And then they've got complete control over us, right? And Tri-State City will be the perfect smart city, which they already, you know, are experimenting with a smart city over in Netherlands, or numerous, actually. I was just in Dublin as well, Ireland. That's sort of a low-level smart city at this time that they're experimenting on there. You know, I was out with Sinn Féin leader, by the way, Mary Lou McDonald, and some of the other Sinn Féin people. You may have noticed that the Chinese police station just got kicked out of Ireland, and I would like to take a little slight credit for that. We worked on that while I was – it wasn't a coincidence that I went to Ireland with Masako Ganaha, right? And so, and we were actually at that police station.
Well, there you are, the global troublemaker.
Yeah.
But once again.
With Mary Lou, I was with Mary Lou, which – this is Sinn Féin. They are ultra-left-wing. Like when you go to their museum, their little gift shop at their headquarters, they got, you know, Che Guevara shirts and stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, the people I hang out with. And so, you know, but she's probably going to end up being the prime minister of Ireland in the future. And so, you know, talk with Mary Lou, she just has no idea there's a famine coming. She's all about, you know, and I'm not talking bad about left-wing Mary Lou McDonald, but, you know, she's talking about inclusivity and feelings and morality and all this stuff. And I'm like, what about the food, Mary Lou? You know, what about the energy? What about the fertilizer? You know, when you talk with people in Ireland, again, I was just over there for about a week. I was in Belfast and Dublin and that sort of thing. When you talk with them, they're like, no, we've got, you know, they're still smarting from the, the Irish famine, of course, well, you know, the famine from 1845 to roughly 1852. I just read two more books on it on the airplane over here, by the way. They have been sort of brainwashed in the Irish into thinking they can't have another famine. And so I talked with one food expert, and he's like, no, we can produce enough food for 45 million people, and we have fewer than 8 million on the island. I'm like, hold on, slow down, Rambo. You're talking about beef exports and things like that. Now, how much fertilizer do you import, right? You import a lot of your energy. Look, I know where your energy comes from, and it doesn't come from you, right? It comes from like Norway and places like that, right? I mean, you have to count energy imports and fertilizer imports as part of your food calculation.
Exactly.
Or you're not being honest with yourself, right? You know this. I don't need to tell you, because you're a businessman, you're a math man, and you're a food man and an energy man. So you know how all this works together. And they're just blind to it. They don't even see that they're about to get clonked on the head like baby seals, you know. In Ireland, you know, famines are endemic to Ireland. Oh, let me talk about this. You know, before the 1845, you know, the potato blight started it, and then the English, of course, pushed that famine over the top. But before that, the last very serious famine they had was I think it ended in 1741, right? If my memory is right, I think it was 1741. And then they had some minor famine. They're always having minor famines in Ireland, but they have a few major ones too. And between 1741 and 1845, their population tripled. And part of the reason that it tripled was because of better agricultural techniques. For instance, the use of guano and that sort of thing, right? For fertilizer, right? Mm-hmm. Which is actually that, because remember, before we had the nitrogen-based Haber-Bosch process, people started using guano. We had wars over guano, right?
Yes.
And so, and what is believed now to have caused the potato blight in 1845 was a fungus in the guano, actually, interestingly.
Really?
But so, in other words, the population of Ireland had roughly tripled in that roughly 100 years. And then their fertilizer itself appears to have been the vector that brought that believed to be a fungus that caused the blight. But again, they didn't actually have to have the famine if they didn't have the English actually shutting off their ability to import food from the United States. There was a lot of Americans that were trying to send food to them. And go ahead.
Well, what did the population collapse to in the 1845 famine?
Mostly the English, actually. I mean, there was the potato blight.
No, but I mean, how small did the population become?
They went down to about 4 million, as I recall. I think about 4 million. They lost. Jeez. It depends on, I mean, I was just in one of their museums for the famine, by the way. And it's believed they decreased by about 3 million. But, you know, you'll get it. The historians will start to argue about that. So I don't, you know what I mean? I don't think anybody actually knows the real true answer.
Sure.
Maybe a million died, let's just say, for argument's sake, and another 2 million. And that's why you have Irish all over the world, right? And Argentina, a lot went to Argentina. Mm-hmm. A lot went to the United States, of course. And many went to Australia, Kiwi land. They went down to New Zealand. And that's why you have – how many is the diaspora? The Irish diaspora is massive. The Irish diaspora, a lot of people don't realize it. It's one of the biggest diasporas in the world. I mean,
good point.
It's massive. I've forgotten how many Americans are of Irish descent, but it's very significant. It's largely because of that.
If the survival of your population is based on one primary source of nitrogen that's making the food supply abundant, which leads to, you know, families and fertility and children and so on, then if something happens to that one supply, you said, you know, a fungus in that case, but in this case, it could be, you know, Nord Stream or war with Russia or economic sanctions or whatever. If you lose that nitrogen supply, you can suffer a population collapse that is, you know, catastrophic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. Okay. Take that further. This is something that you've talked about on a previous show. I don't remember which one. But, you know, relying too much, or you just mentioned it right now, relying too much on single source. That was a problem in the Irish potato famine, too, because they were mostly – there's – I don't even know how many types of potatoes there are in the world. It's like thousands, I think. There's a lot of types of potatoes. I'm not a potatoologist, but the Irish mostly were using this potato called the lumper. They called it the Irish lumper. And that particular potato got really smashed by that fungus, whereas a lot of the other potatoes did not, right? And so
they did not have crop diversity.
That's right. If they, and you've talked about this before, if they had crop diversity, we never would have heard about this, because it never, there wouldn't have been a big famine, or it would have been so tiny that nobody would have heard about it. You know what I mean? But, you know, so, and you know, and the Irish and the Catholics and the Protestants are still fighting like Sunni and Shia. I was just up in Belfast a few weeks ago. They still got more than 20 miles of walls between the Protestants and the Catholics.
Really?
You can't even make this. I mean, oh, yeah, more than 20 miles. I'm like, this is like Israel, man. This is like what I saw in Baghdad, putting up walls between Sunni and Shia.
Well,
and a lot of that, you know, go ahead.
Well, if you want to take down those walls, we could use them on the south border of Texas right now, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are really nice walls that would be really good on the south border.
Yeah, we actually have a good use for them.
Speaking of which, yeah. And actually, I'll be back on that border really soon again. But again, that goes back to that human osmotic pressure that the globalists are clearly – when I talk with Lara Logan about this, I think you're friends with Lara. I don't know, but she lives there in Texas as well.
Yeah, I know Lara.
Lara will tell you. She'll be like, Mike, listen to me. The globalists have been saying – you know how Lara gets excited. Just like – 1.2 billion or 1.3 billion people are going to migrate. That's what they keep saying. And, you know, she was saying that like a year and a half ago. She was screaming that in my ear. And I'm like, here it is. Lara's right. You know, it's like they've been saying it. The globalists have been saying it. And with that, with the that push and the pull of the human osmotic pressure created by the famines. And now when I was down in Darien Gap in Panama earlier this year, you know, Mayorkas came in his three Blackhawks, which I videotaped, and they landed, and they're down there in the Darien Gap, or in Darien Province, actually, expanding the corridor for the invaders to come through South America, through Panama, and up, you know, through the Central America and Mexico. I mean, so our government is expanding that. Our government is actually expanding the flow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all deliberate, a deliberate invasion. But look, let's end on some practical notes here. If you can think of what do listeners here need to understand? Because, well, let me frame it this way. Because a typical person hearing this, if they go talk to their family members, like, you know, famine's coming. And then the family members are like, no, it's not. I can go buy bread right now. Or, you know, friends or even the official media is like, everything's fine. We've got plenty of food. We're the breadbasket of the world. How do you suggest that people think about this and understand the reality of what you and I see? Because you and I, we see pretty far into the future, you know, just the nature of the way we think. And we're right again and again and again. But for people who don't see it now, today, it's very hard for them to see that. What's your best advice for how people can do that correctly?
Well, first of all, we're all products. All of us come from family lines that have been through a lot of famines and wars and pandemics. All of us, every one of us has a family line that's been through a lot. And so we are survivors. We're the product of survivors. And one of the things that I've learned from reading just dozens, about 80 books on pandemic and famine, about 20 on famine and about 60 on pandemic. Those two things are kind of almost like the same thing in a sense. The more you, it's like writing and photography. I'm a writer and a photographer. And at some point when your photography skills get really high and your writing skills get very high, they kind of become, they're like the same thing, actually. And you see that when you read a lot about pandemic and study pandemic and famine and war, you start to go, this is actually all the same thing, actually. It's just a different phase of it. You know, it's like water and ice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how they all mix together. But one of the things that I found is your human networks, your family units, your like tribal units, your church units, are all very important. So getting through these storms requires teamwork, right? And it requires leadership. And so everybody has to first start by being leaders of themselves, and then expand your leadership role to the level that you're comfortable with, right? Maybe you lead just one or two or three or four people, or just yourself, to keep yourself squared away so that you're not a burden and you're actually an asset to others, and you're more of a follower, but work on your network, because your network is everything. I think I told you one time when we were talking, a friend down in Texas, he's in a small town, ex-military guy. He's like, you know what? I got to keep my town together. So he goes to church and he starts taking an inventory of everybody's skills. I think I told you this. And there was, you know, like, it's like making a spreadsheet, like an Excel sheet or something. And he's talking to this one lady, and she's an older lady, and her husband, she's a widow. And she's afraid. And he's like, don't be afraid. And she's like, I don't have any skills. I don't have any use. And he's like, hold on. you had grandkids. I mean, you obviously know how to do stuff. So let's, okay, what can you do? What do you do around your house? And she knows how to can stuff. She knows how to, and he's like, okay, then you're in charge of canning operations.
Right.
Like, what size pressure cooker do you need? How many pressure cookers? How many jars? You know, what kind of lids do you need? What? How much salt and vinegar and all this stuff? You make the list. You tell me what you need. I will make it appear. And then you gotta teach the younger people how to do the stuff. And you be the leader of the canning operations. And I'll bring you a bunch of stuff to put in those cans. You know what I mean? And she's like happy. So that's how, you know, he's using his leadership to find a place for everybody to be a part of a new community, because we're going into a new life. Everything's going to be different. And a lot of us are going to thrive. And because I'm not here to survive, I'm not here to just go, oh, I weathered the storm and I'm coming out with bandages all over my face. I'm coming out to get through fine, to thrive. We're going to have some tough times, of course. Got to be flexible. And I'm, you know, to help the people around me and be of help to the people around me. And help us work together. And so as you make your own local networks, then you network your networks, right? And some of this just comes naturally as a function of normal economics that we're all quite familiar with. And by the way, economies never really die. Even prisons have economies, right? They just change. Economies just change. So, you know, just stay ahead of that. And keep in mind what you've been saying, what David Dubin has been saying, all these smelting factories are closing, all the smelters in Europe and other places. So these things that you, like David was kind of joking earlier, and making car hoods into shovels, buy all that stuff that you need now. Like, I just recently bought a new hatchet and a new axe just because I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to get any axe heads. And I don't want to spend like 3 days running around looking for an axe. I'd rather just buy it right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding. They're very inexpensive. Now, I've done the exact same thing, but I'm a super prepper. You know, as they say, I prep at the community level, right? I acquire enough stuff sometimes, you know, assuming I'm going to have to donate to local clinics or hospitals or churches or sheriff's department or whatever. You know, that's what I do. But not everybody's in that kind of position. You know, they just got to cover the basics.
Yeah, well, you're a future leader. I mean, you're not a future leader. You're a leader now. But people like you are going to be a lot more important just 1 year from now. You're important right now. A year from now, you're going to be like Noah on the ark. I mean, you know, people like you who know how to do this stuff and know how to lead people and motivate people and keep people, you know, the human dynamic going, keep people cooperating together and settling disputes is all going to be part of it and that sort of thing. And that's how we're going to make it through. And we're going to make it through. We're going to take some casualties and then we're going to come out the other side and say, we made it. You know,
I agree. And that's a great note, actually, to wrap this up on, is that you and I both have come to the same conclusion, independently, mind you, that humanity is going to make it through. In fact, humanity is going to prosper on the other side of this, like a golden age like we've never seen before. But there'll probably be a few billion people no longer with us, you know.
Yeah, that's clear. That's clear, Mike. Yeah. That's clear. That's clear.
Yep. But, you know, I mean, I guess this is history unfolding in real time. And for whatever reason, not everybody chooses to participate in the future of the human race. And that's a Darwin Award time for some individuals. I'm sorry, but you know, I have compassion for people. I try to educate, I try to uplift and open their eyes. And for a lot of people that, you know, they're open to that and they're going to save themselves. But there are some who will not be saved. Some who will commit suicide. In fact, some who have already done so. So, you know, there's that discernment between who's going to be with us and who isn't. And it's becoming very clear.
One thing I hope is not with us a lot when this is all over is all these marijuana stores I see. I came back to Thailand. I've been gone for a couple of years, and there's marijuana stores popping up all over the place. You know what I mean? We got to get, like, I don't want any in the communities that I build, you know, in the networks, no drugs.
Yeah.
Zero drugs. You know what I mean? Yeah. You want to bring drugs onto my Noah's Ark, then you're going to go into the sea. You know what I mean? It's
like, you know, are you saying there's a lot of marijuana stores in Thailand?
I can't believe it. They're here now. They're actually here now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I've never encountered a really sharp person who was a heavy marijuana user. It dulls people if they abuse it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the dimming, as you were talking about earlier with the gloat, with the light, but it's like the dimming. You can see, I mean, you know, and they get all, you know, well, alcohol is a drug too. And I'm like, it is. And I don't use alcohol either. But I mean, but the bottom line is, it is definitely, you know, it dims their, and then they become useless. They're not men anymore. They can't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. It's a lot of the younger generation today are in that same boat. All right. So, and I just want to mention a note here. You've referred to my interview with David Dubin quite a lot. I actually did a much longer interview with David that hasn't been released yet, but it's coming out today. For those of you listening to this, it's an hour long interview. But what you were watching, Michael, was my interview on InfoWars where I had David on and we were covering these issues. And actually in that interview, I said, I have to talk to you, by the way. I don't know if you caught that. Yeah. I was like, we got to talk to Michael Yan about this, which we have now done. So I greatly appreciate you. And I hope I haven't caused you to miss your flight.
No. It doesn't matter anyway, man. There's so many flights. It's like catching a bus here.
Oh, okay. And if you miss the flight, there's always, you know, marijuana shops you can visit, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, right. All right, brother. I'll see you in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Please let me know when you're in the pro-Second Amendment part of the world once again. And, you know, we'll go out shooting or something. Have some fun in Texas.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go hog hunting when I get back. All right. Let's go together.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to you later, Michael.
See you, Mike.
Have a great day there in Thailand. Yeah. Have a great flight.
Bye.
Bye.
A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.